The Attorney General wishes to announce that the following program has been rated
liberal rubbish
by the Department of Justice.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Isn't he simply adorable, Pop?
I told you, never trust a monkey!
Listen, you smell something?
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down!
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your host, Joe Vecchio. This is episode number 6, and I'm glad we're getting to this number. And I think I'm getting a little bit more comfortable doing this alone as we go along, but I still like to have people to talk to. I really enjoyed having my guest Dave Merrill here last week. He is an old friend of mine, so I do feel kind of comfortable talking with him anyway. But I like having people to talk to because, to me, that always adds to it. When you're just listening to one guy rambling on like I tend to do from time to time, it's not always as interesting as it is when you have somebody talking. I hope everybody's doing okay out there. We're going to be making some changes in the future on the site as far as streaming is concerned. I had to switch servers, and I'm a little worried about bandwidth on the new server. So what I'm going to do, instead of having all the old shows available on the server, I am going to just put the most recent one up there, maybe the most recent too. And depending on how much space I want to use, I may have a better quality file for broadband and a lesser quality file for dial-up, so that either one can use if you want to get the real quality. But the bigger files take up a lot of space. I mean, if I do this the way I store it on my computer, and I always make two copies, one for my computer, which is a high-quality MP3, last show's, for example, was 177 megs. That's a very big file. And I have a smaller end file, a lower quality file that's smaller, that I put on the server for streaming purposes because it makes it easier for people on dial-up to download, and I can understand that and appreciate that, and that's fine. The file that I use for that is much smaller. That's about 22 megs, last show. And that was, of course, a two-hour show. So you're talking about approximately 10 megs per hour as opposed to, say, 80 or 90 megs per hour. So I think that makes a big difference. There's been a lot of stuff going on lately. I've been reading Atreus a lot more than I have been in the past because he's one of those guys that he doesn't post at one specific time of day, like Bart Cobb, which is what I had been reading regularly. Well, I still read regularly. He just kind of posts as he comes along. And he's been talking a lot about this Greg Easterbrook thing where, you know, Easterbrook made some comments about Jews that people found offensive, and he got fired from his job on ABC for it. And, you know, I'm not gonna really debate the specific issues of that, but it just seems to me that Atreus, along with some of the other bloggers, are now getting to a point where they're starting to talk about each other as opposed to talking about the news. They are in the process of becoming the news. And that's not necessarily disturbing, but it does kind of, to me, take away from talking about the news. Now, I had it was something I noticed, and I know Atreus knows about this story because he was talking about it on the Bart Cop message forum where I posted about it. And this came out of the New York Times last Sunday, the 19th of October. And the story is, Daily Choice Turned Deadly, Children Left on Their Own. Now, For those of you who are single parents, or for those of you who know people who are single parents, there are times, if you don't have any help to, you know, if you don't have any family and you don't have any money savings and you don't have any friends who can help you out, there are times when single mothers and poor working people face really, really difficult choices, and in some cases really destructive choices. And here is a story about a lady named Kim Braithwaite, who worked at McDonald's. She had just gotten promoted to assistant manager at McDonald's, and she was getting ready to go on a 12-hour shift. And by the way, I think 12-hour shifts are horrible. Nobody should work more than 10 hours in a day. I've discovered, because I've had to work those shifts a lot. I have worked days where I've worked more than 12 hours. In fact, I've worked a couple of days where I worked 18 or 19 hours. But once you get past 10 hours, your body a lot of times just shuts down, and you're really not capable of doing any real serious work along those times. Now, Ms. Braithwaite was getting ready to go to work, and she had a babysitter, but the babysitter called and canceled at the last second. So she had a choice. She could have stayed home and taken care of her kids and possibly lost her job. I mean, there's nothing in a newspaper article that indicates that she definitely would have been fired, but as anybody knows, when you're in a situation like that, you take a chance at losing your job if you just call at the last minute and say, I'm sorry, I can't show up. Or, you know, she could have just gone to work and left her children. Now, there were two children, 9-year-old and 1-year-old. And 9-year-olds can be a little bit responsible. It really only depends on the kid. I've known some 9-year-olds that are very intelligent and responsible and mature for their age. But I've seen 16-year-olds that act a lot less mature than you would expect a 9-year-old to act. But be that as it may, what happened was she decided to go to work and keep constant touch with her daughters by way of telephone while she was working. And what happened was somebody, and I want to stress this, that it was not the children that caused this, somebody set fire to the apartment to where they live, and the children died. Okay? Two children died because of it. And Ms. Braithwaite, was arrested for reckless endangerment. Now, this infuriated me because I read some of the prosecutor's comments about this. They were talking about how, you know, it's her fault, you know, because she left the kids alone. And in fact, some of the people, when I posted this story on the BartCop message forum, there were a lot of people like that. It's completely the mother's fault. She should never have left the children alone. You know. And I don't see that as the issue. The issue to me is, why was she put in that position in the first place? And it's the kind of world that we live in now that makes it that way. I mean, we have a world where we live in a country where work is worshipped. I don't mean just you know, considered respectful. I mean it's worshipped to all ends. You have to work. You have to go out and you have to earn a living, blah, blah, blah. And granted, that should be true for most people, but there are always extenuating circumstances. And people and employers and of course, the corporations that own the radio stations and the mass media, they continue to push this idea that if you don't have a job, there's something worthless about you. There's something less than perfect about you. And if you're incapable of supporting children like that, they should be either taken away from you or destroyed. And, of course, you don't want to take a child away from their parents, period, unless the parent is obviously abusive. And here we have a mother who was trying to do the right thing. She wanted to work. She wanted to support her children, okay, at least by everything the right wing and some other people talk about, all those standards. She wanted to do the right thing. She wanted to work so that she can afford to put a roof over their heads and put food in their mouths, put clothes on their back. She wanted to do all the right things. But if she didn't go into work and she lost her job, she would have been ridiculed. But because she chose to go to work, the kids died. I mean, it may not, you know, it didn't have to happen. You know, certainly the kids didn't set the fire. The mother didn't set the fire, certainly. They died because some jerk decided they wanted to do it. It was definitely arson. It is definitely an arson investigation, okay? But it goes to show where we've come to in this country, that people are forced to make that kind of decision. First of all, why is McDonald's requiring people to work 12-hour shifts like that? Assistant manager, no. Assistant manager is still not a salary position. You get paid hourly. Why are they needing, with all the people out there looking for work and all the money that McDonald's makes, and I'm not interested in their damn profit or loss statements. They can afford to pay their executives as much as they're paying them for losing money. Yet when it comes to maybe hiring a few extra minimum wage workers to help take the burden off of people like Ms. Brathwaite, they don't want to hear it. They want to put more pressure on the people that are already there. And this is what's happening in this country. Now, some of us in this country remember when there was no workplace in the country that would force a mother to make a decision between caring for her children and losing their sole means of financial support. There was a time in the country where that was true. That time doesn't exist anymore. That world no longer exists. And the wealthiest people in this country who aren't satisfied with owning more money and power than any human being has ever needed or morally earned continue to grab for even more wealth and more power, regardless of the consequences, and that attitude is now prevalent in American society. It starts at the top with these executives who push fast food franchises to maintain maximum profitability. This pressures the franchise owners to demand more and more of their employees, and usually for far less money than they deserve, and it eddies into money pools to the prosecutors who want to make an example of this lady to further their own careers. And in the end, it trickles down to Ms. Brathwaite directly, reaching her by way of the fear she must have felt as the decision loomed. Watch the kids or keep my job. These are the life or death situations, decisions, that the working poor in this country are facing more and more often. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I had a thing about the sanctity of life. And this is exactly the sort of thing I talk about when I point out how worthless and empty these sanctity of life scumbags are. Because they openly support policies that force people to have to make decisions like this. If this woman didn't have to worry about getting fired for not showing up for work, she would have been home. It's possible that maybe she would have died in the fire too, you don't know. It's possible that she could have saved the kids and they all would have been alive and that would have been great. But the point is, she was given two choices, bad and worse, because of the society that the right wing has helped to push. And if she had lost her job and stayed at home and saved the kids, she would have been ridiculed by right-wingers on the radio, by worthless fat slobs like Rush Limbaugh, that pill popper, for leaving a good job and perhaps having to go back on welfare. They're put in impossible positions and they're punished for the choices that they make for no other reason than they're poor and they're powerless. Now, is this the world we want to live in? Is this the country we want? Are these the lives that we want to lead? That's what I want to know. Now, Atrios is one of the most well-read blogs in the country. He's quoted by Paul Krugman of the New York Times. He's quoted by Eric Alterman of MSNBC, who also is much more popular even than Atrios. And he knows about this story. He saw and responded to the big fight we had on the message board and Bart Cop over it, yet there was not a mention of it on his site. This is an important story. And he is concentrating on his little battles with Greg Easterbrook, who makes more money than any of us out here in the blogosphere will ever see, at least those of us in the amateur blogosphere. This is a big story. And we need to be pushing this as an example of what has gone wrong with this country and where the right wing is leading us. And it just makes me angry. And I'll give you another example of how stupid people are. In Alabama, Governor Riley, a while ago, who used to be a congressman and was very anti-tax. And then when he became governor of Alabama, he suddenly realized that the state simply wasn't going to make it. What Southerners don't understand is that they are being subsidized by the industrial Northeast. The industrial Northeast puts in more taxes to the federal government than they receive in return. And the medieval agrarian South gets back more in federal taxes than they do input into it. And the Southerners, of course, are the biggest anti-federal government people in the world. And because they are now in control, I mean, the bulk of the Republican leadership are Southerners, and anti-tax, anti-government Southerners at that. And they've pushed policies to basically to destroy the federal government's power to dole out money to help people out, because any type of help like that they see is socialism, unless, of course, it's helping their own business interests. Now, Alabama is 48th in the nation in state and local revenue as a percentage of personal income. It has the nation's least equitable tax system. Alabama's income tax kicks in for families of four. This is families of four earning $4,600 a year. $4,600 a year, they start taxing you. That's the lowest in the country. The property taxes are the lowest in the country, because who gets the benefits of that? The wealthy business industrialists who own a lot of the property there. Farming interests. And Governor Riley wanted to change that. He saw how unfair it is. In fact, he even phrased it in Christian terms, saying Jesus would not allow the poor to be treated like that for the benefit of the rich. And he wanted not to increase taxes on the poor, but to actually lower their taxes while raising the taxes of the business interests and the property interests in the state. And naturally, it got voted down, mostly by the low-income Alabamans whose taxes would have gone down. Can you believe this stupidity? I mean, there's an old saying that no one ever got poor by underestimating the intelligence of the general public. And in fact, someone added an addendum to that where it was a fictional conversation with a politician, and the politician was asked if that was true, and the politician said, "We'll never know, because their intelligence was something that was impossible to underestimate." And this is a perfect example of it. This is an absolutely perfect example of it. Their taxes would have gone down. But no, they still have that medieval mindset, that peasant mindset that says, these people have money because they deserve it and they earned it, and we're poor because we deserve it and we earn it, because God obviously doesn't like us, so we just have to work harder. Okay, maybe that God part isn't right, but the whole drift of it is, if you're poor, you deserve it, and if you're rich, you deserve it. Nobody who is rich has ever been lazy. Nobody who's poor has ever worked hard. And that's bullshit, ladies and gentlemen. That is absolutely fucking bullshit. But they're stupid enough to vote for it and support it. As far as I'm concerned now, you know, Alabama can go rot. I say we take all of the federal money out of Alabama. As a matter of fact, they're already beginning to hurt because of these policies. The state government has been having to cut services. And I'm not even talking about welfare and stuff like that, which they're totally and adamantly against. I'm talking about books for school kids. I'm talking about disabled people not being able to get to school because government services and programs are being cut that help them to do that. That's what I'm talking about. And they're hurting themselves. Who do you think built the highways that they love to drive their pickups on? Who do you think built the schools? You think private groups built those schools? No, it was governments built those schools. But you know what? They feel the same way about education as they feel about anything else. If you can't afford it, you don't deserve it. You know, if they really want to take care, if they really want to get rid of the problem of these poor people and the burden that they are on Alabama society, just go ahead and tell them that the North is going to declare war against them, conscript them into a service, and send them to Brooklyn to fight. Maybe if a bunch of them got killed off in a war like that, it would solve their problems. And you know, if they were told to do such a thing, they would go out and do it. Because quite frankly, they're just white, proud, and stupid.
He's a good boy. He loves his mama. He loves Jesus and his country too. He's a good boy. Working class white male. Loves violence and his dumb girlfriend too.
And that's enough to make me...
That's enough to make me sick.
I am white, proud, stupid. I am much smarter than you think, 'cause you don't know what's right. You're black instead of white, and you gotta be like me if you wanna be free. In my world. In my world. What you say? Do you really think that way? Every time you talk to each other, human race, limb from limb, limb from limb. Yo, the first generation with a racial segregation. Imagine the look on a brother's face as he turns integrated. White pride and war zone, and gathered Nazi bands, they're a bunch of fake bastards. Nationalist buffoons, and they don't even know what the fuck they're singing about.
Some people don't like you to talk about those things. I know that. Some people don't like you to mention certain things. Some people don't want you to say this. Some people don't want you to say that. Some people think if you mention some things, they might happen. Some people are really fucking stupid. Did you ever notice that? How many really stupid people you run into during the day? God damn, there's a lot of stupid bastards walking around. Carry a little pad and pencil with you. You wind up with 30 or 40 names by the end of the day. Look at it this way. Think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that. And it doesn't take you very long to spot one of them, does it? Take you about 8 seconds. You'll be listening to some guy. You say, this guy is fucking stupid. Then there are some people, they're not stupid, they're full of shit. That doesn't take very long to spot either, does it? Take you about the same amount of time. You'll be listening to some guy and say, well, he's fairly intelligent. He's full of shit. Then there are some people, they're not stupid, They're not full of shit.
They're fucking nuts! Dan Quayle is all three! All three! Stupid, full of shit, and fucking nuts! And where did he get that wife of his? Have you taken a good look at that Marilyn Quayle? Where did he get her? At a Halloween party or something? She looks like Prince Charles, for Christ's sake. Let me ask you something. Does he actually have to fuck that woman? Huh? God help him. I wouldn't fuck her with a stolen dick. That's my political humor. People like it when you're topical.
You gotta die, gotta die, gotta die for your government. Die for your country, that shit. You gotta die, gotta die.
Government. Before that, we had George Carlin with Some People Are Just Stupid. And before that, we had Propagandy with White, Proud, and Stupid. Carlin kind of following the whole stupid theme that I had set up at the end of the last segment. Hi, how you doing? I'm Joe Vecchio, your host of the Cup of Joe radio show. We're in episode 6, the sixth time I've sat down in front of a microphone and done this thing for you before doing it with somebody else on the air, so to speak, for quite some time before. Now, that last song basically is the extension of what happens to stupid people, and I'm sure there are a lot of soldiers in Alabama who are joining the reserves there because probably they needed some extra money. Some out of a sense of patriotism or duty, perhaps, but probably because they needed a few extra bucks to pay the bills. And they're stuck out in Iraq, and I'm wondering if they're very happy about having voted for Mr. Bush, because, you know, Alabama went to Mr. Bush in a pretty big way. And you know that the military tends to favor the Republicans, though why, I don't know. As Bart Kopp always says, why they prefer to come back under in a body bag under Bush as opposed to a body bag under Clinton, I'm not sure, but that's the way it is. In fact, we get the story out of the Washington Post today about how they had a big mass leave program for the soldiers. And some of them, about 30, have not shown up at the airport. It was about out of 1,300, so 30 people is not a significant number, but still, when you consider, these are soldiers who are under oath, who are supposed to go. Now, apparently a few of them, and the Pentagon won't say exactly how many, had extenuating circumstances, deaths in the family and all that, and that's perfectly understandable. But troop morale in Iraq is apparently very, very low. In fact, 49% of soldiers surveyed there said that the morale at their unit was low or very low. And to me, it talks to, again, the double standard that I spoke of in the very first story about how the rich and poor people. Now, we all know Mr. Bush's record on this. I mean, this was during the Vietnam War, where people were drafted and people were being forced against their will to go out there and slosh along in the jungles of Vietnam and get shot at and in return shoot people. And now, of course, we have an all-volunteer army, but the reservists are out there doing a mission that they weren't particularly trained to do, and every time that they're told that they're going to get sent back for a while and then return later, that keeps getting delayed, and their term of service keeps getting longer and longer. So they sent a few people on leave, and a bunch didn't come back. Now, Mr. Bush, of course, got a nice cushy position in the Texas Air National Guard, which he kind of hung around in for a while, was kind of sort of a pilot, although I'm told that the plane that he was given wasn't exactly what you'd call a modern fighter jet. It was basically, that particular unit was full of the sons of the rich and connected in Texas to keep them out of harm's way, as we always do. You know, in America, we try to build a classless society, but of course, it never really works that way, does it? I mean, the rich get away with what they get away with, and the poor people are just stuck. And Mr. Bush then decided he wanted to go to Alabama to help a friend of his out with his political campaign, so he just kind of left there, re-signed with a guard unit in Alabama, just transferred, but never bothered to show up. For 2 years, he was AWOL. 2 years! And they haven't yet charged any of these soldiers with being AWOL, but that's a criminal offense under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, of course. During a case of war, it could be considered to be desertion, and it could be punishable by death. In fact, the last guy we executed for that sort of thing was in the Korean War back in the 50s. And I think it's a damn shame how we continue to have these class problems. And the Jessica Lynch story is a perfect example. And, you know, first of all, here's a girl who joined the service because, as I mentioned before, she needed the extra money. And she went and she was doing her duty in Iraq. She probably wasn't happy about it, but she's a loyal American, and she understood that the oath she took, you know, what the oath she took meant. And she went out there. And she got lost. Her and her compadres got lost, and they got in a jeep accident, and they were injured in that, and they were taken to an Iraqi hospital where she was taken care of. And in fact, the Iraqi doctors tried to return her, but their bus that had her on it was refused at a checkpoint. And then, of course, they made this big old stage rescue attempt, basically just taking her out of the hospital and returning home. And then they just lied. They made all these stories about how what a great rescue she was and how she had shot all these Iraqis and she had all these, you know, bullet injuries. She didn't have any bullet injuries. She got injured when her car crashed. That was the extent of her injuries. Okay? she was well treated by the Iraqi doctors, and you know, they wanted, like I said, they wanted to bring her back. But of course, we had to make this whole big deal about they were trying to torture her, or poison her, and doing all this stuff. And it's not true at all. They're just lying to you. You know, if you believe any of the stuff that's coming out of the government's mouths about Jessica Lynch, they're just lies. They are lying to you. And it just goes to show the extent they're going to go to propagandize this to make this look good. But if you're rich, you can get away with it. I mean, in fact, someone did a survey. They said, of all the people in government right now, the elected officials, congressmen, senators, and the administration, I think there's only one of them who has a son or daughter who's currently in the military. And that's outrageous. And Mr. Rangel, congressman, Democrat, wants to propose a bill to reinstate the draft. And you know something? If they want to maintain the type of troop levels they're going to need to maintain to keep the peace in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in other places that they undoubtedly intend to invade, they're going to have to reinstate the draft. There's not going to be any choice. And the military is already spread pretty thin. And it's these soldiers who are paying the price for the poor decisions of our commanders, of their political and upper military leadership. They are paying a severe price for it. The casualties are mounting up. We're essentially getting one per day, never mind the amount of wounded. And now they have a news story about how what they're trying to do in order to make things not look so bad is they put a moratorium on showing returning dead from the States. They used to have a big ceremony about it. You know, since according to Washington Post, the article here, they have basically closed the curtain on coverage of returning coffins. Since the end of the Vietnam War, the article says, presidents have worried that their military actions would lose support once the public glimpsed the remains of U.S. soldiers arriving at air bases in flag-draped caskets. I remember a particular instance back when George Bush the First was in office. And he was giving a press conference and kind of laughing and joking, and they kind of had a split screen of U.S. soldiers' coffins returning from the Gulf War. And here's, you know, Mr. Bush laughing and joking, and they're showing scenes of, you know, American dead on it. And Mr. Bush was outraged, and the press, you know, apologized for making Mr. Bush look bad, although why they felt the need to apologize is beyond me, maybe because knowing Mr. Bush and knowing the type of people he deals with, they might have simply had them killed. And let me tell you something, if you think that's outlandish, these people aren't afraid to stoop to that. I mean, anybody who's going to release the name of an undercover operative for the CIA just because her husband made some statements that the president didn't like, which essentially puts her life in danger, is certainly capable of killing someone who gets in their way. And when you look at the fact that three prominent people in the Democratic Party have been killed in mysterious plane crashes in the last few years. John Kennedy Jr., who may or may not have had political aspirations, but if he did, you can guarantee that he would have been a threat to the Republican Party. Mel Carnahan, the Louisiana governor, whose wife is now the senator. Excuse me, Carnahan was a Louisiana senator, and his wife took over his position. In fact, John Ashcroft lost to Mr. Carnahan in an election. He couldn't beat a dead man in an election, but of course they make him attorney general. And of course, Senator Wellstone, who people are still mourning, and who should be mourned because he was a powerful voice in the Senate for left-wing causes. Even though I didn't always agree with everything that he had to say, that's okay. You're not required to be lockstep. We're not Republicans. We don't have to be lockstep with each other. So, but back to the original story, what they're trying to do is just pretend it's not there. Is just pretend that there are no dead coming back by blocking all access and not saying anything about it, telling the press, you're not going to cover this. And that's disgusting. You know, that is absolutely disgusting that this administration would do this. People need to understand that actions have consequences. The Republican Party leadership likes to talk about personal responsibility. Let's talk about personal responsibility. Let's talk about the consequences of what they're doing. They lied to us about sending these kids into combat in the first place. They used the troops for photo ops. But when the opportunity presents itself to do something for the troops, they're sadly lacking. There are soldiers in Fort Stewart, Georgia, right now, wounded reservists who are sitting in horrible conditions in the Georgia heat, waiting months to see a doctor, simply because the military is trying to find a way to keep from paying a few bucks extra for them for benefits once they get out. That's it. That's it. These are our troops. These are your sons and daughters. They are not the sons and daughters of congressmen or senators, because only one of them has a child in the service right now. And you can bet your ass that that person, whoever that person is nowhere near the action and is never going to see any action. But we're the ones who wind up paying for it. The poor. We're lied to about the war, and then we suffer the consequences of it. And there are still people out there who are blindly supporting what's going on. Once again, I ask you, is this the kind of country we want? Is this what the American dream is? You know, it's not an American dream, it's an American nightmare. That's exactly what it is. And I think it's disgusting that we've come this far in this country where we accept leaders who do that. Granted, a lot of the same stuff happened in Vietnam. And I'm not going to argue that it was Democrats who are in charge of it right now. But you know that the Republicans were right there behind it when it came to the war. They love that stuff. They love all the fighting and the killing, so long as somebody else has to go and do it. George Bush goes out there and he plays golf. He'll give a press conference deploring something, and then he'll go out and shoot some drives. Is this what we want? You have to ask yourself this, ladies and gentlemen. You have to ask yourself this. You sit there, people sit there, and they turn on the radio, and they listen to these scumbags telling you if you're not rich and powerful, you deserve what you get, and the only way to stop it is by becoming the very people you hate. And we're going to sit here and laugh at you until you do. They put you in that position. And they support policies that eventually cause our soldiers to die somewhere for no reason. And who do you think is profiting from this? You know, after World War II and the Marshall Plan came into existence, our government took great pains to make sure that cronyism wasn't there. They made sure that the Germans, the Japanese, and the other countries that we had occupied and that we were rebuilding had a strong say. In fact, I think it was pretty much a veto power over who got contracts to do what. Because these people were motivated by a desire to do good. I am no fan of General MacArthur, because he was a prima donna and a jerk who deserved to get fired because he would have started a nuclear war with China just for his own vanity. But what he did in Japan and what this country did in Japan is a monument to the goodwill of the United States when we put our minds to it. And the same in Germany. But when you turned around, as soon as things cleared up, the Republicans once again shot back into power by screaming fear of communists. Now it's fear of liberals. Now it's fear of terrorists. It doesn't matter. They need that. They need that in order to manipulate you. They push the economic barriers down for people so that they have to join the military in order just to make a living, just like Private Lynch. And then when they die in combat, they don't want you to know about it. They'll sit there and prop them up on aircraft carriers or on military bases and make good photo ops with them. But when it comes to supporting the troops for real, doing things that are important for the soldiers. They're absent. They're AWOL. Just like Mr. Bush was AWOL. Just like Mr. Cheney was AWOL. Just like Mr. Rumsfeld was AWOL. It's remarkable to me how it's the Democratic candidates who have the people who actually served. General Clark, four-star general, leader of our troops in NATO during the Bosnia campaign. By the way, not too long ago, President Clinton visited Bosnia, and he was greeted as a hero. They named streets after him. They declared a holiday on the day he came to visit. That's how much they loved him. They love him in Ireland because he worked hard to broker the peace. We haven't heard a damn thing about people shooting each other in Ireland for a long time, have we? Because President Bill Clinton put the initiative and put some muscle behind the peace process. And they believed him and they loved him for it. Bill Clinton can go damn near anywhere in the world and be received as a hero. On the converse of that, George Bush can't even go to England. He was scheduled for a trip in England. And there were going to be so many protesters, they had to call it off. Usually when they have a big American president visiting, they have a big parade. And he goes through the streets, usually accompanied by the Queen and the Prime Minister. But there were going to be so many protesters. Don't forget, over 1 million Londoners came out. The biggest protests in London's history. And London has a long history. Against the Iraq War. George Bush isn't even welcome in the home of what is supposedly our greatest ally, in the capital city of what is supposedly our greatest ally in the war against terror. What does that tell you? But here in this country, we've been brainwashed into thinking Mr. Bush is a great leader. We'll be back.
Yeah. There are Jews in the world. There are Buddhists. There are Hindus and Mormons, and then there are those that follow Mohammed's book. I've never been one of them. I'm a Roman Catholic, and have been since before I was born. And the one thing they say about Catholics is they'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came. Because every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
Ground God to make them pay. Expressions on the faces of his 1 in 1,000,000, the power of the man, the few that drives a clan, the motive and the conscience of the murderer. He's a preacher on TV, the false sincerity, the former editor by the big computers, and in the air bombs, the kids with no moms, and a fearful man he's inside me. Exercising his authority. We've got the American Jesus bolstering national faith. We've got the American Jesus overwhelming millions every day.
Yes, Bad Religion with American Jesus. Before that, we had Monty Python with Every Sperm is Sacred, which was from their movie The Meaning of Life, which is not their best movie, but it's an okay movie. And before that, we had R.E.M. Losing My Religion, which is not really about religion, but it's about losing your virginity in the terms of losing your sense of innocence. But it all kind of ties in to the whole religion topic that we're going to be talking about. Now, there's a lot of people who talk about America as being a Christian nation. You know, we're one nation under God and all that. And the fact is that it's not true. In fact, America was founded mostly by people who followed what we call deism, which is kind of called the watchmaker theory of God, whereas God assembled everything as one would a watch, put everything together, wound it up, and let it go and does not interfere. That is what deists believe, and that was what the bulk of our founding fathers believed. There were some fundamentalists, but even they understood that if you made a government religion from a majority, that even though they might be the majority religion of the moment, the tables might turn on them. So when Jefferson was writing about the separation of church and state, even though a lot of them considered Jefferson to be an atheist and dangerous, they understood what he was talking about, and they sided with him in his presidential run because they understood what could happen when you allow the government to get into the religion business. And unfortunately, however, there are people today who either don't know this, choose to ignore it, or are lying to you about that. And the Bush people are certainly among them. I mean, they really do believe in this sort of divine right type of deal. My friend Bruce Beachon, as he's also known, you know, he thinks that democracy, that is government by the people, is essentially unchristian to begin with, and he believes in the divine right of kings and queens. Of course, I think that's all rather silly. Kings and queens didn't always get their power by divine right. They got it in very often by killing the person before it. But nowadays, we have a bunch of people who honestly believe that not only is the United States a Christian nation, but that our entire war with Iraq is part of a greater context, a greater battle between Jesus and Muhammad. Now, the news article in the Telegraph in England brought this up. You won't see very much of this in American papers, although it has gotten some coverage. But the general, Jerry Boykin, who is the newly promoted Deputy Undersecretary of State of Defense for Intelligence, he is the one generally in charge of leading the hunt for Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. And he has publicly declared that the Christian God is bigger, quote-unquote, than Allah. And he has called Allah a false idol, and he believes the war on terrorism is a fight with Satan. Not a fight with terrorists, a fight with Satan. And he talked about why George Bush was, and this is a direct quote that he gave to a speech to other Christians. He said, "Why is this man, George Bush, why is this man in the White House? The majority of Americans did not vote for him." Well, that's one for the truth there. "He is in the White House because God put him there for a time such as this." You know, General Boykin is not the only one who believes this. The Bush family itself believes this. There was a story about them attending, you know, one of their regular church services, and the minister there, who was obviously a big Bush supporter from his statements, made that proclamation himself, that, you know, God basically has allowed Mr. Bush to be there at this time so that he can lead the war on terrorism against the evil Islamic Muslims and all that stuff. And the Bush family, you know, amen, cheered right on, you know. General Boykin was fighting Muslims in Somalia. He told Baptists in Florida last January about a victory over a Muslim warlord in Somalia who had boasted that Allah would protect him from American capture. He said, "I knew my God was bigger than his," said General Boykin. "I knew that my God was a real God and his was an idol." And that's the sort of intelligent, mature thinking we're getting, not from a few schmucks on Free Republic. No, this is from the guy who's in charge of the hunt for two of our biggest enemies. Bin Laden much more than Hussein, and Bin Laden is much more dangerous than Hussein. But those are our two biggest enemies right now. The hypocrisy, the stupidity, I don't even have words for the actions and the words of this general, and how that makes us look throughout the rest of the world. There are so many things going on with religion right now. Big ways. Catholic religion having a problem with pedophilia. Gee, what a surprise. Sexually repressed males. I mean, that's what the problem is when you have someone who's not allowed to get married, who's not allowed to have sex. Listen, you know, sex is a normal human drive. It can be very intense for some people. It can be less so for others. But it's a normal human drive. It's something that is built into us. And while we do have the power to control it to a certain extent, the more you repress this, the worse things get. And this is why you get the problem with pedophilia. And this is why you get the problem of priests fooling around. You know, at least the Protestants allow their ministers to get married, but you know how the Protestants are about sex. They don't like recreational sex at all. You know, Baptists in particular are very anti-recreational sex. Their whole attitude is punish beforehand and don't do anything preventive. But, you know, the Catholic Church is also the same way. They don't like recreational sex. You know, if you're going to have sex before marriage, it's evil anyway. My friend Bruce, otherwise known as Beachon, has gone so far as to call divorce a murder, in the sense that it's a murder of a family. And that's just a ridiculous statement. It's outrageous. How is it murder? People aren't always compatible. It just doesn't work that way. But religion is a major driving force in our country. It has been. But we've always kind of understood, at least the vast majority of people have always kind of understood, that if you make it the official thing, then it would be a bad thing. And while we've always had this "In God We Trust," you know, the "In God We Trust" didn't get on our bills until the 50s. "Under God" did not get added to the Pledge of Allegiance until the 1950s. Why? Because we wanted to clarify our difference between us and the godless communists. I am what some people would consider to be a spiritual person. I don't have any knowledge of any kind of afterlife. I mean, I know some people have a feeling about that, but I don't. I don't know what happens after I die. I know that I am eventually going to die, because death is about the only fair thing in life. Everybody catches it once, unless you, of course, believe in reincarnation. But I don't know what goes on after. And you know what? While if something comes to me and I'll study it and I'll learn it through experience more than through reading, because I think this is something that really needs to be experienced more than read, or something that has to come from inside rather than forced on the outside, and something happens to change my mind about it, then I will change my mind about it. Okay, but I really don't know. I don't have anything in my head that says there definitely is or definitely isn't a God. There are some things that make me think, well, you know, some stuff is just so weird that it can't be just random. But on the other hand, you know, randomness can be, you know, can make a kind of sense all its own. During the playoffs earlier this year, and I talked about this, the Red Sox versus the A's. One of the Red Sox outfielders, the Red Sox right fielder, Trot Nixon, hit a key home run to win a game for the Red Sox in extra innings against Oakland. And they interviewed him after the game, and he kept talking about how, you know, he gave everything to the Lord Jesus Christ, and it wasn't him who swung the bat, but it was Jesus who swung the bat, and Jesus who allowed victory for the Red Sox. I have news for you, Mr. Nixon. I may not know much, but I can guarantee you, I think I can speak with absolute certainty and clarity that Jesus doesn't give a shit about who wins a baseball game. The only thing that Jesus might be interested in is whether everybody played well, they played by the rules and fairly, and nobody got hurt. Jesus would care about that. But let me ask you, if Jesus was helping you hit that home run, did he also help the Yankees turn around and beat you? Does Jesus like the Yankees more than the Red Sox? You know, since 1918, which was the Boston Red Sox have not won a World Series since 1918. And the Yankees in that time have won 26 or 27 World Series. A lot more than anybody else. A lot more. In fact, I think the second place team doesn't even have 10. Does that mean that God likes New York more than he likes Boston? They're both good places to live in. They both have their good points and their bad points, just like with everything else. But does God like one more than the other, and does he show that by who he allows to win in the baseball field? I don't think so. These are minuscule things in the great scheme of life. They don't mean anything. But for the people who are pushing the war with Iraq, the religion is a big part of it. You know, we talk about the fascism aspect of this administration and how I've mentioned about the fact that, you know, just because we're not actively gassing Jews doesn't mean we're not fascists. One of the tenets of fascism is the use of religion to push their worldview, in the sense that they believe that God is supporting them. The Nazis, the Germans, on their belt buckles had written the term Gott ist mit uns, which means God is with us. They firmly believed that God was with them, just as we firmly believed that God was with us. In the American Civil War, both sides used religion to back up their side. The Confederates believed that it was our God-given right to own slaves, because they were savages, and we, being the superior white Christians, were responsible for their welfare. And the Union believed that it was God's will that everybody should be free. And that was the two disparate things, but they were both using the same Bible and both quoting the same book, the same philosophy. What would Jesus do? Would Jesus be involved in this war? Really? I don't think so. I'm not a pacifist. I want to say this right now. I am not a pacifist. If I believed for real that there was a definite threat from Iraq, from Syria, from any of these places, then that threat should be dealt with. If we have to bomb them, we bomb them. After I learned more about history, I was in favor of us dropping the nuclear bomb on Japan. Not because I think it's good that we killed Japanese people, I think it was horrible that we had to do that, but because in the long run, it saved lives. It ended the war sooner, and it saved soldiers on both sides. And while the Japanese are not necessarily happy about being nuked, I'm sure they were glad with the way their country has turned out, because Japan is the number two economic power in the world, even though they've been having some financial difficulties lately. They're a wonderful country. I've lived there. They are great people. They're not perfect, but they are good people. The Germans are the same way. They're good people too. I know a few Germans from the chat room, and I've met a couple of German people. They're very nice people. And while they might have hated the fact that their country got pretty much destroyed during World War II, they're very happy that we came back and helped them afterwards. Well, we didn't come back. We were already there, but you know what I mean. I remember very clearly after 9/11 the picture, and I still have that picture on my website, of the German sailors on their destroyer coming by an American ship with a big sign, and they're all in their dress uniforms, all lined up and saluting, and they had a big sign that said, "We are with you." And the Germans were with us after 9/11. But you know what? We used that as an excuse to go after countries we had no right going after for reasons that did not exist, and for the benefit of a few very wealthy people who are using religion in great part to push this war. And that's another sad thing. You know, religion can be a very good thing. It can be a good social environment. I mean, a lot of people go to church just for the social reasons of it. My wife likes to go to church. We were going to a church up in when I was living up in Alpharetta, a very interesting church, the North Fulton Community Church, run by a guy named Andy Stanley, who is a nice enough guy, but I always kind of worry about these charismatic type leaders. But I didn't go to the Mass right after we started bombing Afghanistan, or was it Iraq? I didn't go to the Mass, and I was born Catholic, so I call it a Mass, even though they don't really call it that. But unlike a lot of the other preachers and evangelists, he wasn't apparently was not wholeheartedly in support of what we were doing. The sermon that he talked about that day was how all the different armies of the world eventually have come and gone in that area. Now, his thinking was, there are no other kingdoms. There is only one kingdom of God. Okay. While I may not necessarily agree with that, I understand where he's coming from. He was not in support of us just wantonly killing people and killing them in the name of Jesus, because we're not doing it in the name of Jesus. Do you understand this? We are not doing this in Jesus' name. Jesus wouldn't have anything to do with this. While he may or may not have wanted to walk with any of the protesters, he would not have anything to do with us bombing and killing children. We're killing children for lies. For lies. And for greed. And for power. And for money. And that's what this is all about. And they phrase it, and they have people like General Boykin, who are simply phrasing it in religious terms as a means to manipulate people into supporting this. And some people are very easily manipulated. You know, it's no surprise to me that there are people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell in the world, because there are always going to be people who are going to try to take advantage of someone's faith. That's understandable. I mean, it's human nature to do that from time to time. It's our responsibility to keep a lid on that as much as possible. But the sad part is that there are so many people who are willing to give them their money. Especially guys like Jimmy Swaggart, who had a big affair, and Jim Baker, who had a big affair. These are the same people who were crucifying Bill Clinton for the Monica Lewinsky affair, yet they were having affairs themselves. But, you know, their followers were still supporting them. There is still a core group of people who are giving these people money. You know, if you want to get rich in America today, and you have absolutely no sense of morals, and no soul, as I like to say, it's not that difficult. Memorize a few Bible verses. If you have some money, purchase a Christian mailing list and sell stuff. You know what? You'll get rich immediately. If you're charismatic enough, and you're a good salesman, because that's what televangelists are, they're salesmen. They're not salesmen for Jesus. They're salesmen for themselves. Don't let them fool you into that. Nothing they're doing is for Jesus. And I'll tell you this, and I'll say this, I've said this before. If these are the people that God wants, then I've got no use for God. If when I die, and again, I don't know what kind of afterlife there is, but if when I die I wake up and find myself looking back at Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, I don't know where they think they are, but I know I'll be in hell. And that's the plain truth. And how people can continue to give money to people like Swaggart and Baker, and they still do. I mean, Baker's still on the air. He's still on the air. So is Swaggart. Why? Because people continue to give him money. And as George Carlin said, I guess some people are just stupid. Anyway, it's been a pretty good couple of days. As I said before, in the future, I think this is going to be the last show that's going to be part of a greater all the shows, and it was just going to be when show 7 comes out. Show 7 is going to be the only one that's going to be up on the site because I have to save server space. If someone has server space to donate to me, email me joevec@bellsouth.net. If you have server space that you don't mind me using to stream the show from, please donate it to me. I would be very happy. And that way I can keep all the shows up on a site somewhere for people to stream it. But starting next week, starting show 7, we're going to just put the most recent show on the site. I'm going to try to do at least 2 shows a week. I want to do like a weekday show and a weekend show. Today is Tuesday. I did a show on Sunday, so it's a little quick, but I wanted to get some of this stuff out about the, you know, the woman, the poor woman's kids. But anyway, I hope you all have a good couple of days. This is Joe Vecchio signing off with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. You all take care. Here's Martin Mull. The top of 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 the top of